Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we say goodbye to one of the original legends of rock and roll.
In tribute, let's put some Little Richard on the record player and rip it up. Okay, Patrick, more sad news in the world of rock and roll. We lost one of the originals, one of the founding fathers of rock and roll. Little Richard died at age 87.
Mm-hmm.
It's very sad news, and it leaves us with really only, I guess, one of the original, you know, sort of rock and rollers, Jerry Lee Lewis, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And who knows how long the killer will hang on, as tough as he is. He could be out there for
that's right.
for decades to come. But yeah, Little Richard was ill for several years. He had suffered a heart attack and a stroke, and also eventually, according to news reports today, succumbed to cancer after several years of battling the disease. So certainly rest in power to Little Richard. It's not possible, I don't think, to calculate the influence of somebody like Little Richard. I mean, this is a person whom a high school senior named Robert Zimmerman, later to become Bob Dylan, wrote in his high school senior yearbook that his desire was to join Little Richard when he graduated from high school. That was his goal. And, you know, from the Rolling Stones to the Beatles, Paul McCartney was a huge admirer of Little Richard, to just about everybody you could think of in that generation of the British Invasion. We're deeply influenced and touched by Little Richard's work in the mid-50s.
Well, it's Saturday night and I just got paid. Fool about my money, don't try to save. My heart say go, go, have a time, cause it's Saturday night and I'm feeling fine. I'm gonna rock it up, I'm gonna rip it up, I'm gonna shake it up, gonna ball it up, I'm gonna rock it up and ball tonight.
All right, so this show is called Rockin' the Suburbs, and I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And usually we talk about happier things, but when someone like this passes, we like to pay tribute to that artist. I think you said it well. Enormous impact, I think, on music. You mentioned Dylan, the Beatles. I mean, the Beatles famously covered Long Tall Sally. Mm-hmm. They used to open for him in Hamburg.
That's right.
You know, before they broke. I think Paul McCartney took a lot of that singing style from Little Richard when he would do another song like I'm Down, for example. When he would get into his like full on rock mode, he sounded a lot like Little Richard. I think you could certainly we know James Brown was a big fan. He started off sort of impersonating Little Richard before he developed his own act, and you could definitely see the line there. I think you got to talk about somebody like Prince, right?
And, oh, absolutely.
You know, definitely took a lot of the kind of look and showmanship from Little Richard. Musically, I think what's important about Little Richard is, you know, he fits in with that early rock and roll. There's definitely some strong rockabilly in some of these songs, like Rip It Up, for example, would be one of those.
Yeah.
But I think different from some of the other guys, different from, say, Elvis, different from Jerry Lee, Buddy Holly, and Chuck Berry, is that Little Richard still had a foot kind of in the boogie-woogie jump blues kind of music, you know? And that's where he kind of got his start and came up before it sort of morphed into rock and roll. And, you know, unlike those other guys, he did not really have what you would call a rock band behind him usually. It was usually more... You know, he was on piano, and then he'd have sort of the almost, you know, jazz horns kind of setup, you know, that jump blues kind of thing. Heavy on saxophones and that kind of stuff, right? He didn't bring the guitar out like, certainly like Chuck Berry did, right?
Yeah, totally.
Or have a stripped down sound like Elvis had more. You know, it was still kind of a full on kind of band sound, you know, from like just, you know, like the previous era, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But the music was rock and roll. I mean, it was up-tempo. It was fun. It had that rock beat. And here's where he made his biggest impression, I think, is that the guy just went all out. And that was what, probably more than anything. I mean, certainly he wrote some great songs and he pounded away on the piano and all of that. You wouldn't call him a technical master on the piano like you would Jerry Lee. But vocally, he probably rose above all those guys. He was the guy who kind of developed the notion of like the screaming rock and roller.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I think it's so important that you mentioned his jump blues and that kind of start, because Richard did put out, for a couple of years, unsuccessful singles before he got hooked up with Specialty Records and his longtime producer manager Bumps Blackwell and released Tutti Frutti in 1955. He had a bunch of what you would call conventional singles, but it wasn't until he really let loose and, you know, showed his true inner wild side or wild child that he really found who he was. And I think, you know, you can't imagine anything like Prince without Little Richard. Right. I mean, the fact that he occasionally dressed, you know, in clothing that was essentially, you know, women's clothing. He wore a lot of mascara. He had this hair that was, you know, pompadoured up in starch and, you know, just had this look that crossed sexual boundaries and you know, also challenged and uprooted a lot of behavior that was considered normal and conventional, to the point where, you know, famously, at around 1958 or 59, he saw several visions that he thought were, you know, the Lord talking to him and telling him to change his lifestyle and get out of rock and roll. And he, for about 5 years, he sang only gospel music. And, you know, that was part of the period where, you know, people claimed there was no rock and roll in 1959 and 1960 when Buddy Holly had died and Little Richard had gone, you know, to the ministry, although it's unclear whether he ever actually became a preacher, right?
Right.
He came from a family of preachers, but I think his father is an interesting example. He was a guy who owned a nightclub, sold bootleg whiskey, and did a little preaching on the side. So even his dad had one foot kind of in the secular and one foot in sort of the church and gospel music. So it's one of the great stories of rock and roll that Richard left it and sang gospel music without very much success, really. He wasn't ever really embraced on the gospel circuit. One person I want to mention, too, that I think Richard was very important to is Otis Redding. They came from right around the same town, Macon, Georgia, where Otis kind of grew up right in that area and where Richard was born. And when Otis Redding had his first chance at a talent show, he sang a Little Richard song and ended up going back and winning that talent show for, like, it was a weekly talent show at a radio station for 15 weeks in a row. And early on, he actually played with some of Richard's backing musicians when Richard was no longer doing rock and roll. Otis Redding did. So he was a huge influence on Otis Redding as well.
And another guy who could really belt out a song too, So I think you definitely see that there. I mean, I just think, well, two things. I mentioned the singing. I think the singing style was so important that he developed. It was not mannered like a Buddy Holly. I mean, Buddy Holly was a little more of a, I don't want to say it, he was more of a craftsman, right?
Uh-huh.
And that was his contribution to rock and roll.
Absolutely.
That he sort of crafted a little bit more thoughtful sort of pop songs, right? Chuck Berry was just, he developed really, the rock guitar, and then was a great storyteller in his songwriting. Elvis had the swagger, Elvis was sort of the original sort of rock star in that, he had all of that. And then Jerry Lee, who I think is probably the most similar because they played the same instrument and they went all out. I just think the difference there is that Jerry Lee went more all out with his playing.
Yeah.
And Little Richard more with the singing. That would probably be the difference there. But both of those, I'd say, are kind of, they're almost like the original punk rockers, those two guys. What I mean?
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. In terms of I am going to give this everything in my body and soul right now, and you're going to get all of it, right? And the thing about Little Richard, too, which is so cool, is that you got to remember this is 1950s, like you were talking about, the fact that he was so bold and so brave to put himself out there as this flamboyant showman and take all those risks and succeed was one thing. But also, because it was the 1950s and things were still, segregated and tense, his songs would chart. And so that was a success for him. But then they'd almost immediately get covered by white artists like Pat Boone. Who would that have more success with the songs, right?
Yep.
Selling to a white audience who, maybe wasn't always ready. And Pat Boone, very, squeaky clean sort of singer. But what I love, the great story I love, and I know a lot of people have heard this, it's sort of legend now, but it's so beautiful, is that, after Pat Boone had success covering Tutti Frutti and took it even higher on the charts than Little Richard, Little Richard followed up soon thereafter with Long Tall Sally, and he purposely sang it as fast as he possibly could so that when Pat Boone inevitably would cover it, he wouldn't be able to sing it very well because he wouldn't have been able to enunciate it the way he, his singing style was in order to make that work.
Gonna tell Aunt Mary about Uncle John. He claimed he has a misery, but he's having a lot of fun, oh baby.
He was also one of those people who did sell records to both black and white audiences eventually. And, his records continued to sell all the way through, the 50s and 60s because, number one, he wasn't making any new rock and roll records. And number two, they were just that influential and continued to be repackaged and put out. But you're right, Jim. I think the first person who really let vocally and on stage, I was reading earlier that many of the tributes that have come in, Mick Jagger was talking about how when the Rolling Stones also opened for Richard, he would watch him every night perform and see how he entertained an audience and kept them in the palm of his hand. He was such a vivacious performer. And that was hugely influential to a young Mick Jagger and Keith Richards as well.
Yeah, sure. I think of a guy like Robert Plant, too,
totally.
In just terms of that, again, what we think of is that kind of, screaming rock and roller, right?
Mm-hmm.
It comes back to Little Richard. The other thing I want to mention, too, is the use of sort of nonsensical lyrics.
Yeah.
I don't know. He probably wasn't the first to do that, but it certainly he helped popularize it with a song like Tutti Frutti.
Yep.
Which I think is also important when you think of what rock and roll meant to kids in the 50s. My understanding of the backstory on Tutti Frutti is that it was actually a more scandalous song originally, and it got yes. kind of cleaned up a little bit before he went and recorded it for Specialty Records, like you said. Even just having those kind of nonsense lyrics and a lot of a vague sort of quality in the song mm-hmm. left it mm-hmm. up to a lot of interpretation. What is this song about? Which teenagers, I think, really loved, and the parents would kind of, yeah. you know, wonder if their kids should listen to it or not, and it would kind of drive yeah. them a little bit mad, and so then the teenagers only loved it more, right? And so, again, that
yep.
I think that's important when you think about culturally what rock and roll meant back then and probably still, you know, does today or did for several decades, right? That idea of it, there has yep. to be something kind of dangerous in it, you know, yeah. for it to really make sense. And it's funny because you think of like a Chuck Berry, sort of a master sort of storyteller in his songs, but you always kind of knew what the songs were about. There wasn't yeah. like a lot of interpretation to be left there. But, you know, with Little Richard album, man, you think like putting this on and people are trying to be like, what do you think he's really talking about there? What right. is that? And you could just, you know, it could be left up to the imagination too. So there was something to be said for that.
Yeah. And another aspect of that is being so moved by the music that you, you know, sort of devolve into something nonsensical right. and wordless to try to express this feeling inside that you don't even, there are no words for it. They haven't been invented. And Richard helped invent that, you know, those phrases.
She rock to the west, but she's the gal that I love best. To the booty, oh Rudy. 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 A wop bop a loom bop a lump bump bump. I got a gal named Daisy. She almost drives me crazy. Got a gal named Daisy.
Oh, one other thing we should mention, too, is for a while, didn't Jimi Hendrix play in his band?
I believe that's correct.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, Jimi Hendrix, yeah. And, you know, again, all those people, those British musicians that he toured with and inspired and encouraged and gave advice to, you know, when he was over there playing tours. And Richard attempted several comebacks in the 60s, and none of them really hit. You know, things had sort of moved on toward that Beatles, you know, influence and things when he came back to secular music. But he spent the rest of his life, the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, being Little Richard and
yes.
appearing in movies and writing books and appearing on talk shows. If you've ever seen one of the great Christmas specials of all time is the Pee Wee Herman Christmas special with many stars in it. But Richard does an amazing appearance in that movie, in that special, along with many others. You know, and that's a great example of him just being Little Richard and just being flamboyant and outrageous. You know, there's nobody, I think, who knows anything about music who wouldn't instantly recognize his face and his voice.
That's right. That's exactly right. I can remember being a kid growing up in like the 70s, and he'd just make like guest appearances on random TV shows, and it was like, there's Little Richard. Like he became iconic. He became a personality, a celebrity unto himself.
Yeah, totally.
And you know, he'd always do his little shtick where he'd sing hi and do that little woo, you know, whatever. Yeah. And but it was great. He was fun. He was a fun guy. He had a spirit about him that I think, again, was so important to the kind of music we're talking about, and so I think influential as the music progressed.
Yeah, absolutely. Richard Wayne Penniman was his birth name, December 5th, 1932, in Macon, Georgia, born. So 87 years old. Rest in power, Richard.
Rest in power. One last thing I want to say is, I mean, all of his hits were in the 50s. You mentioned, you know, sort of, you know, his career went on, but he, you know, in terms of his charting career and his impact in terms of sales, it was all in the 50s. But just listen to these songs, because I think they're so well known, like even today, right? So you got Tutti Frutti, Long Tall Sally. I mentioned Rip It Up, which maybe isn't as known, but it's one of my favorites, if not my favorite.
Yeah.
I love it. You listen to it, and you're just like, oh my God, that's rock and roll.
Lucille.
Jenny, which was also later called Jenny Take a Ride, which became, you know, Mitch Ryder covered that. And then I think Springsteen had it in that Detroit medley that was sort of inspired by Mitch Ryder and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just like a fabric here that we're weaving together. Good Golly, Miss Molly. I mean, come on, you know.
Pretty good one. Yeah.
Hey, 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 Hey. Wasn't that, didn't the Beatles combine that with Kansas City?
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
And they covered that.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many. I'm sure I'm missing some here too. But just so many, like, sort of iconic, just rock and roll songs, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think you find any of those early compilations of Richard's music, you know, 15 to 20 songs that he cut for specialty in the 50s. Even some of the B-sides are fantastic records, and they all have a spirit of sort of, you know, New Orleans style music, crossed with that jump blues and that soul to invent something completely new.
Yeah, right. The Girl Can't Help It. That's another one. Oh,
yeah, totally.
Oh, and how could I overlook Keep a Knockin'? I mean,
oh, yes, that's right.
Talk Keep about singing, man. That is like it's frantic. He's like so desperate, you know?
That's right. Yeah, will not give up.
Yeah, that's right. So it's great. So, you know, go out, find these records, or, you know, go to your streaming service and put on some Little Richard tonight. And, you know, it's one of those.
Crank it up. Yeah.
It's sad, but the music will make you happy again. So,
that's right. Yeah. Yeah. And Richard had a long, long run and left a deep, everlasting impression on music. And you mentioned Prince, and there's just, it's incalculable where it all went.
Yeah, completely. So, all right. Once again, Little Richard, rest in power.
Rest in power.
Hopefully tomorrow we'll have something happier to talk about, Patrick.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Okay, it's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Keep a knocking, but you can't come in. Keep a knocking, but you can't come in. Keep a knocking, but you can't come in. Come back tomorrow night and try it again. You said you love me and you can't come in. You said you love me and you can't come in. Woo! You said you love me and you can't come in. Come back tomorrow night and try it again. Woo! Keep a knocking, but you can't come in. Keep a knocking, but you can't come in. Keep a knocking, but you can't come in. Come back tomorrow night and try it again.
The wop bop a loo bop, ba la bam boom.